time for the Second Funniest Podcast with your hosts, the Kevin Miller and Justin Wersch. Have fun, guys.
Well, thank you, Sam. Hello and welcome to the Second Funniest Podcast. This is episode 472, if my math is correct.
And it never is.
Yep. I am your host, Justin Worsham. And with me, as always, is the man where the hotel coffee maker makes the coffee for him. Mm. The one, the only, the KevinMiller.com. Jump and press the circle button, Kevin.
Double decaf latte your foam, Justin Worsham.
Yes, indeedy. I'm drinking this. This is brought to you by Cuisinart Hilton Hotel Coffee. That's right. That is what Justin partakes when he's on the road. The only coffee. I don't always drink hotel coffee, but when I do, I choose Cuisinart.
Good to know.
I almost choked doing that bit. Terrible. I wanted to do a long slurp, and I think I inhaled some coffee. My lungs are now caffeinated, and good times will be had. All right. So
I've been enjoying Handsome Coffee today.
Handsome?
Yeah, it's a company down in downtown Los Angeles. Oh. And we received it as a parting gift at a wedding, and it is very smooth. In fact, when you go to their coffee shop, they do not have sugar.
Really?
Yeah, that's how, I mean, it's very like hipster, blah, blah, but that's how confident they are in the sweet naturalness of their coffee, that then you do not require natural sweeteners.
Can I ask you a question? Are you talking into your microphone?
Oh, I'm not. Okay, there you go. I forgot I put it up above my head so that I could eat a burrito.
Oh, it's a headset mic. Okay, good.
Yeah, I'm gaming while we're talking.
Yeah.
I have things to do.
I love it.
Guess what game I'm playing today?
You are playing Star Wars.
Yes. How did you know?
Because I actually have a webcam in your room.
Oh, that's a funny joke.
You know, it's funny because I know that we had planned to talk about it anyway, and I have an interesting story about the Star Wars that maybe you already knew. I don't know. Did you want to go straight into that, or you want to cover Vita stuff first?
Let's talk about it. What do you got to say about Star Wars?
I didn't know this, but it is the most expensive game in history.
I had wondered that. Go on. What is your source?
This is coming from Gama Sutra, and it says the game that is rumored to
Gama Sutra.
Yeah. What? I call it Gama Sutra because I'm a Hulk fan.
and that website, I've referenced it before. That is the industry standard for video game news. That's the place that everybody goes. It has jobs. It has insider stuff. They do really good. I check it out pretty regularly. I recommend it to all of us who love games, especially those of us who have nothing but opinions but no information. Gama Sutra is a great place to start.
Well, it says the game that is rumored to have the largest development budget in history is now free to play. Electronic Arts MMORPG Star Wars The Old Republic has had a hard time holding on to subscribers since its launch as a pay-to-play game less than a year ago. Paid subscriptions quickly jumped up to 1.7 million during the game's first 2 months on shelves, but those subscribers didn't stick around. By May, that count was down to 1.3 million. By the end of July, it was under a million, at which point EA announced to its anxious investors that it would introduce a free-to-play mode. Don't miss What Went Wrong with Star Wars The Old Republic. I guess that's another article. Let me see if that is in here. Yeah, well, since we're going to talk about it, I'll hang on to that.
Let's find out more.
It says EA has never publicly stated the game's development cost, but popular analyst projections range from $150 million to $200 million. Which would make The Old Republic the most expensive game in history and one that is almost certainly not living up to the company's expectations. The game still has the subscription model in place for $14.99 a month. Loyal players still get infinite access to all the game's content. However, a new mode introduced Thursday allows players to play up to level 50 in the game with some additional restrictions. Let's see what it says here.
Well, and to be clear, level 50 is the level cap. So
So it's not like there's a limit on that area. Yeah,
that's what I thought. I was like, oh, like you don't get to play the last 10 level. No, 50 right now is the level cap.
It says here, last week EA and BioWare, so this is a little bit of old news. Last week EA and BioWare Austin said Star Wars The Old Republic would join the free-to-play ranks. Game monetization expert Raman Chakrazade examines... Yeah, that's a great last name. What happened to the subscription model's great hope? A long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, which is the phrase that must start every article ever about Star Wars. That's me writing that last part, not the first part. Star Wars The Old Republic was vaunted as the kind of large-scale, massively multiplayer online game that would justify a monthly subscription. It didn't have to follow the free-to-play trend because, well, it was supposed to be a special case. But things change fast. BioWare and Electronic Arts announced last week, amid reports of dropping subscription numbers, the Swator would be changing its business model from subscription to free-to-play, calling an audible and drastically changing the fundamental way a game makes money. After less than a year on the market, is not a particularly good sign.
So, ain't that the truth?
Let's see. It says... Lack of social interaction is what it says is one of the... What separates massive multiplayer online games from other simpler products is the promise of social interaction. A much more consistent play experience can be had with a single-player or small-team competition game for those that are not seeking this social interaction from their playtime. It is thus imperative that an MMO be built to provide maximum positive social interaction. Mm. Most social interaction takes one of three forms, in addition to chat... functionality. A, cooperative play. Taking on an opponent with 5, 20, or even 100 of your friends and teammates adds a great deal to the excitement level of a game. Not only does the result of an encounter require a lot more communication and teamwork, it also adds additional randomness that can make every encounter unique. Doing well in such situations also can bring great prestige, as others will come to admire you if you perform well under pressure when they are depending on you. The best parts of Swator, as I'm calling it, are the storyline missions. Their cinematic quality makes you feel like you're in a movie that you control. The weakness of
TV show, maybe.
Deep Cable, even? Or
maybe Deep Cable. I'd go with that. Sure.
The weakness of this design is that the focus is on a single player and that a full group could be just two players and AI companions.
And it has logical errors. So, for example, when you play the my main character is a Jedi counselor. They're a Jedi Knight. The very first companion that you get within your story is this unique lizard person that is supposedly experiences a lot of racism, and he's looked upon as kind of a dirty outcast. And he makes several references to people giving him the stink eye when he shows up in places. But in the very beginning of the game, it's you and like half the people in the world in the level zero are the same class as you, and they have the same companion running around with you. So here is, you're supposed to have this like unique, you know, outskirt alien from a faraway place that everybody hates, and yet one quarter of the population in this town are clones of him.
Sounds like Chakrazade has a point.
Hold up to that.
Yeah.
And your teams, and they may say this later, if the point of a game is to create social content, you can only have four people playing at once. That includes companions. So really, if I want to bring my sidekick and you and I want to play and you want to bring your sidekick, we're done.
Yeah.
The team can't get beyond that. You would have to drop a companion just to add another player. You can only get up to four.
Yeah, it says that a full group could be just two players and AI companions.
Yep.
This gives Swator the feeling of a massively single-player game. While there are missions that can accommodate more players, the game never manages to escape this feel. Trade and economic interactions. Being part of a player-driven economy can give opportunities for player interactions that involve not just dozens of players, but even thousands. If your economy is designed well, assets in the economy will maintain their value or equity over time and allow a player to build wealth and prestige. This can make for a game with a very long lifespan, as EVE Online has demonstrated. Starting on the first day of the retail launch of Swator, I held an economic death watch on the LinkedIn Game Developer Group forum. I tracked the real-world exchange rate from Swator credits to real dollars. By giving almost daily exchange rates, I was able to demonstrate that the value of game credits fell by 97% in the first 30 days. This destroyed all equity in the economy and amputated all of the associated content. Given the complexity of the craft system in SWTOR, I would say this eliminated most of the social interactions in the game before they even had a chance to get started.
Wow.
The mechanism of attack against the economy was an instance reset exploit. I described this class of virtual economic attack and its countermeasures in my 2009 proprietary paper, Sustainable Virtual Economies and Business Models. A vulnerability was discovered during the SW beta, the Star Wars beta test, and a macro was developed to take advantage of it. It is in the interest of the creators of such macros to keep them secret, because competition can quickly drive down the value of credits created this way. In this case, the macro did end up in the public space, implying that the motivation for whoever did so was to rapidly destroy the commercial viability of a major Western game product. This was disastrous for both EA and the gold farmers preying on SWTOR. I did notify EA immediately about this macro, but by then the damage was done.
What a good Samaritan.
Yeah. Am I right in that what he's saying is that the way that you earn credits was something that made it easily susceptible to gold farming and therefore would just create a situation of inflation?
Yep. Well done. Well said.
Okay. The C is competitive play, or PvP. Competing against other players can be an excellent form of social interaction that makes gameplay both prestigious and unpredictable. The downside to competitive play occurs when PvP is non-consensual. This is because... this is because not only is the result usually 100%... That's taking a Jedi mind trick to a whole other level. I could...
you couldn't let it go.
She was asking for it. With her weak-minded abilities. Usually 100% predictable, lowering the enjoyment of the griefer, but can be discouraging to the victim. To deal with this problem, most MMO designs restrict competitive play to PvP arenas, which are usually tacked onto the original game late in the development cycle. Since such games are built for PvE first and foremost, PvP combat balance is rarely achieved, making PvP combat in arenas disappointing. As combat in SWTOR was balanced for PvE and PvP, combat was balanced for PvE, PvP combat balance was never attainable. Further, since the PvP arenas were added very late in the development cycle, they are not as impressive as the rest of the game and can quickly become repetitive. Possibly sensing this, the BioWare developers made the rewards for arena PvP much greater than in PvE game, almost forcing players to spend time every day in PvP, whether this was their preference or not. While the intention might have been to conserve the main storyline and make it last longer, this is a really good article. I think for many, this reduced the overall immersion of the game. And then it goes on to say the ineffective monetization design. SWTOR launched with an unlimited play subscription model, which is about as close to no monetization models as you can get.
Yeah, and that's the killer right there.
It is difficult to recall any MMO launched after 2004 that was a commercial success when monetized this way. Even those games launched before 2004 with subscription monetization models have attempted, with varying degrees of success, to integrate microtransactions and free-to-play design elements. So, am I right in what they're saying is that you got to play whatever you want with as long as you paid a certain subscription, and that what it should be is like tiered subscription?
No, meaning to say that there needs to be things that you can purchase within the game that are add-ons. So when you bought the Star Wars back before it was free to play, you got everything. There was nothing you could possibly want for. You would simply have to play the game to achieve it. Whereas to monetize it, a model that Guild Wars has done is that there are two economies. There are time and physical real world money, and you can spend either of those to achieve your goals within the game. So most things that you want can be achieved through either time or real world money. So if you're impatient and got disposable cash, you can buy it. If not, not. Now there are some things that that's it. Everything. And then there's stuff that just plain experience will buy you, which is sort of like a parallel economy But the, you know, just through playing the game, you get their fake gold. Star Wars had none of that. Everything is the only way to achieve things was through time, and there were there was no reason for you to give them more money because you were paying $15 a month.
Yeah. That's interesting because it says right here, it says the problem with the unlimited subscription model is that it rewards players for blasting through your content as fast as possible. Players have adapted to this over the years by planning days off work to do all-nighters on launch day. This model rewards players for playing completely through your game in the first month and is a recipe for canceled subscriptions and poor retention. Wow, it's funny that you would look at that. Well, I never really thought of it that way. When you hear him say it, you're like, well, yeah, no shit, Sherlock. Like, you know, that seems kind of common sense. The use of a free play monetization model requires a careful placement of your best content, what I call carrots, on the other side of payment opportunities that I call gates. Effective placement of carrots and gates requires early integration with core design elements and thus is best achieved if it is planned for at the very earliest stages of game design. Converting a game from a subscription model to a free-to-play model is difficult to do effectively, especially if the base game is complex and is no guarantee of increased revenues. If a free-to-play model is designed into the core game design from the start and is done without selling game objectives or advantages, it is my opinion that this can multiply first-year revenues by between 2 and 4 times. This perhaps makes the choice of monetization model the biggest single factor in the ultimate success or failure of an MMO product. In the case of Swatar, this is likely its most fatal flaw and should act as a clear warning to future MMO producers to consider this aspect of game design earlier and more carefully. In a few years, history may look back at Swatar as an artistic milestone that was not a commercial success. It may signal the official end of the subscription monetization model for MMOs, though I think this was clear years earlier. Games that are a commercial success, like World of Warcraft or EVE Online, can endure long enough to produce numerous content expansions. This makes them very difficult to unseat by new product offerings. Any new MMO entering the market in the current environment must be carefully designed from the start to endure long enough to build market share.
Agreed. Stuff.
Yeah, that's a great article. I really like that.
Yep. Welcome to my world. And that's the thing. What I have a feeling that if we could go back in time and sit into LucasArts's development room, and when they're like, monetization, microtransactions, or subscription-based paying. Well, let's look at the history. World of Warcraft is a campy-looking, cartoonish game built on a very new and unpopular franchise, and it's got 11 million subscribers, and they're doing just fine. We have Star Wars and a desire, one of the most recognizable brands in the universe, and a desire to tell a rich story, to increase the animation and graphic style of it. People will want to pay for that. That Yep. must have been their logic. That it was done by World of Warcraft, and we can do it better. And all the market research, because if they did spend $200 million on developing this game, a chunk of that budget was on market research. Had to have been.
Yeah.
And somebody had to have said, microtransactions are the future. And they said, no, we trust the quality of the product that we have. I think that's evident. Without any questions or being able to talk to anybody, that has to, especially with that article in mind, like, what else were they thinking? And clearly, they were right. The game is beautiful. It's well-crafted, thoughtful, but missing those key components of an MMORPG. They either tried to make it something that it wasn't or tried to redefine the genre, but clearly they had to rethink their minds. 10 months out. The game was released on December 20th, 2011, and here we are in November of 2012, and they've already changed the business model.
Well, and this is all speculation, but I think that there's an element of they thought, well, Star Wars is huge, and so they probably just had to pitch it to the numbers people that's like, listen, World of Warcraft, like you just said, is something that doesn't have this great license. We're going to come in, and anybody who plays World of Warcraft is also going to be a Star Wars fan.
Yep.
And so they just said,
realistic. That's a fair assumption.
And we are going to make a gorgeous game, like just a beautiful game that a Star Wars fan is going to love. So this is almost an example of the artistic side you know, not having the business side's brain also mm-hmm. be involved in that, you know, mm-hmm. listen, yeah. we love all this, get artistic, go crazy, because like what you're saying, gameplay, everything sounds like it's just primo, but that where they fell short was the guy in the suit coming in and saying, listen, guys, this is what economically needs to happen within a game so that you can sustain your artistic endeavors.
Yeah. Yeah, I absolutely. Because I think the bottom line is gamers, we don't want to lease games. You know, for $15 a month, I want to see my content improve, mm-hmm. not just be able to have access. And not when there are amazing titles out there that do the same thing for free. And, you know, Guild Wars 2 is the prime example and kind of the game changer of the whole industry to be able to supply such amazing content for one low price.
Yeah.
You know, I bought the game, and the only other purchases I've made are for character slots, and that'll probably be it for a long time for me. Whereas this, I played Star Wars, and I was like, yep, that was cool. I'm not paying $15 to keep playing a game. I've got a console with games loaded on it, and I can go play those right now.
Yeah, me too. That's why I don't play games on my computer, sucker.
No, that's not why.
What? That's not what you're saying?
No. You lack imagination.
How dedication. Dare you?
You lack...
How
you
dare
lack
you?
Sustainability.
How dare you?
Your lack of love. We, my wife and I have discovered the power of Netflix and How I Met Your Mother, and we've been watching that show like it was crack. So it's great to go back in time to the year 2005. And she is annoyed within the first six episodes when she's like, you're never going to find out who the mother is. It's going to be years before you find that out. And I had to explain to her, look, I love games with no end. It's about the journey. It's about the adventure, not about the conclusion. And she was like,
I find it interesting that you say I have no sustainability and lack imagination, and then immediately followed up with the appreciation of the Netflix that I provide for you and your family.
Fair enough. I withdraw my rudetude.
You are welcome.
No, you have plenty of imagination, but you're the player, like we discussed last time.
I'm the swing boat. I'm the independent. I like to play, and like, because I've thought about, I love the ease of downloading a game. And it's funny because my desire was not necessarily economic. When I buy games and I sell them, it was just out of a disinterest in gathering of things that I don't use and having them around me. And I recently realized that an unintentional consequence of that was that it was financially more sound. Like, I essentially would get games for $15, $30 less than average. And I was like, oh, I'm glad that makes sense. Now it's like a sealed deal, because I was like, oh, I want to download this game for my Vita. And like, yeah, but if you buy the hard copy, then you can sell it on eBay and then go from there and murder. So that's why I will stick to that. And I almost bought the Call of Duty Black Ops, which brings me to my next thing. But this story that I found on Yahoo makes me feel like maybe I shouldn't, because I'm like what the guy. That's one of the things I appreciate about that article that we just read about the social aspect of online games, is that I don't know why or where it came from, but I've always been the guy that's like, listen, I don't need some 12-year-old snothead, you know, whooping my butt on Madden. Yep. But yep. Now I crave that. I don't understand why. I cannot explain it, but I just, there's an aspect that has switched in me that I really do want to have a, even if it's not, like, I don't want to listen to a guy play his, you know, death metal and take a bong hit online either, but I do like the idea of knowing that polygonal character running across the field is a real person.
Yeah.
As opposed to a computer-generated AI. And I think that's an interesting shift, that if it's happening to me, as we call on this show, the swing vote, the you know, the half-ass guy, then I think
that's what I call you. Yeah. I call you the full ass.
That's right. I go big or I go home.
That's right.
But you know what I mean? That I think that might be also a sign of the culture changing even more to where online games and that kind of additional multiplayer content is going to be a must. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I was like, oh, but because I was like, I'm not going to have time to play Call of Duty. But when I'm on the road, I could play online. And I knew it wasn't going to be as good as on the PS3. But I'm like, it'd be fun. I prefer a third-person shooter, but I'd play a first-person shooter. And then I saw this. It says Call of Duty Black Ops 2 is getting rave reviews, and judging by the early numbers we're hearing, it's bound to be another seriously big seller. But not all versions of the game are created equal. Just witness the stunning fall of Call of Duty Black Ops. Oh, okay. Declassified for the PlayStation Vita. Oh, I see. Now I can see what they're doing. Intended as a companion to the console game, it was supposed to be one of the handheld's biggest holiday titles, which could not be more true when the Vita, the only thing that is lacking when the Vita is game library. That's the only thing that makes you kind of go, ugh. But even then, with the PSP titles, it's still solid. That's not going to happen, at least if critics have anything to say about it. Reviews of Declassified are just starting to roll in, but with an unthinkably low 29 rating on Metacritic, it's already got a shot at going down as the worst game of 2012.
Wow.
Game Informer calls the title appalling, a complete embarrassment for gaming's biggest franchise, and an absolute mess. Critical, citing artificial intelligence that is literally suicidal, hiding behind a car and shooting into it until it explodes.
Yes. Awesome.
And a ridiculously easy campaign mode, which reviewer Dan Reichert completed in just 42 minutes.
What?
If you're looking for a fun single-player shooter experience, you'd be hard-pressed to find an experience less complete than Declassified, he writes. In dramatic fashion, it completely fails to live up to the high bar of quality gamers expect from the Call of Duty name. It's also a discouraging sign for gamers like me who shelled out $250 for a Vita in hopes of console quality experiences on handheld. I can't recommend Declassified to anyone. Giant Bomb can't either. Reviewer Jeff Gertzman, I think, dings it left and right, noting the game feels too small to be entertaining, with maps so tiny that you'll literally spawn with an enemy in your crosshairs, or vice versa. This would be a questionable purchase at traditional downloadable pricing, but at $50, no way. Other sites, including IGN, haven't published their review because review copies were not sent out in a timely manner. Pocket Gamer, who went out and bought one anyway, thinks that was by design, so that they didn't release the publisher review copies on purpose because they thought it was going to be bad. Call of Duty Black Ops Declassified is a cynical, half-baked, tired little mess of a game, and Activision knows it, writes reviewer Peter Willington, adding that it gives a middle finger to fans. What happened? While it's hard to say definitively, there are rumors that development and production of Declassified were severely rushed, with game makers having no more than 8 months to put the title together. Even that was an impressive slide whistle. Even for
that's almost as much time as it took the guy to beat it.
Yeah. Even for an annualized franchise, that is a Herculean task. The bigger question is what this might mean for the Vita sales this holiday. Sony had high hopes that the game would give the Vita a sales boost during the holidays, even offering a bundle of the game and system. But if reviews remain this low and there's little reason to think they'll turn around in a significant way, it could be more bad news for Sony's handheld gaming device. That sucks.
Which takes us to what's happening in Japan.
Yeah. Where did I see that? I had it up here. Ba-boom. Ba-boom. There it is. 3DS outsells Vita 47-1 in Japan.
47-1. Let's put that in some sports analogies. Okay. That would be like the score at the end of a Niners-Bear game, which is going to be this Monday night.
Hell yeah, that's the bell for the Bears. They're over. You're endangered species now, Bears. Welcome to California, where we celebrate your ass by whooping it.
That would be like the final score if they both got touchdowns. Yeah. If every point was a touchdown. Of a 7-329. Yeah. they would basically hand them the ball and they just walk down the field for 2 hours. That would be the same thing.
True. It says the portable console war in Japan has always favored Nintendo's 3DS over Sony's Vita, but never quite like this. Last week, the Vita hit a new all-time low in the country, selling only 4,021 units. By comparison, the 3DS sold nearly 47 times that at 187,077 units. The numbers only tell half the story, however. 3DS sales were bolstered significantly by the release of Nintendo's Animal Crossing New Leaf, which debuted at number one on the charts with 721,786 copies sold. Still,
can you run that for me? I was just a lot of numbers. What'd you say?
So it's saying that the 3DS numbers were they think that they were primarily bolstered, like, because the 3DS has been outselling the Vita, but they're saying that the real big surge has come from the new Animal Crossing New Leaf game, which debuted as a mobile game. It debuted at number one with 721,786 copies sold. So those 700,000 plus sold, they say that, you know, that is a reason for the 187,000 3DSs sold
because people
want to play that game. Still, it's clear that Sony is having a very difficult time selling anyone in the country on the Vita, and a lack of desirable software in the region isn't helping matters. The Vita had no release last week, and none of its games appear in the top 30 chart. There are, by comparison, 14 3DS games. For a closer look at the numbers, last week's Japan, see the charts available here. I'm not going through that. I don't know if Kevin, can you hear me? Stop doing that.
Yeah. Otherwise, sorry.
No, it's fine. The sales are too hard to, like, it's just a message board that they posted it up here. But Animal Crossing, Dynasty Warriors, and Halo 4 are the top three games, and there are new releases. Last week, number one was Tales of Exilia 2. It's an RPG by Bandai Namco. And then, let's see, Super Mario Brothers is up there. Silent Hill is a new release. And Nicolas Canchu, Model of Auxerre Audition.
Audition?
Yeah, it says Audition.
Dangerous.
It debuted at number 8, and that's a 3DS title, but there is no... Are they saying that the PSP is also... Because that's interesting to me. PSP is also Vita? I'm trying to find that there isn't even a single Vita title. Because it says at in sales, number 4 was World Soccer Winning 11 2013 for the PSP. That can't be right. They're not making games for PSP. That's got to be.
I mean, maybe because they have downloadable PSP games.
But then that would make that article wrong, because that would last week was at number 4 and it's number 8. So has no release last week.
The world doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. So that, but that's interesting. Well, that's why I brought it up, is that if the PSP is selling titles than the Vita, and the PSP, anyone who's picked up a Vita and a PSP would tell you that a Vita is a far superior machine.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's way better. Even if you take away the touchscreen and the rear touchscreen aspects, like just it's a PlayStation controller in your hand.
Yeah.
And it's way better.
Than a box with a pin.
I really feel like if I'm Mr. Sony, I throw a bunch of money at developers to develop games for this Vita, because I do think it's a machine worth investing in.
Throw developers the cash to unlock crossplay, so that you can play the entire library of PS3 games on your Vita. Skyrim, Red Dead Redemption, Portal 2 on your Vita. The technology is sitting there on the box. It's a patch that needs to happen.
It's got to be room, though, right? It's got to be disk space, or no?
No, it just has to do with the fact that the games were not developed with that in mind. So in order to make it happen, they have to do something to make it compatible with the Vita. The controls are different on the Vita. It doesn't have all the same functionality as a PS3 controller. You're missing the R3 buttons and the L3 buttons. And so you have to rebind those keys to something else on the Vita. And then there's some, streaming things that you'll have to do within the scripting language so that it can handle the content being shoved over the net. But if they did that and turned the Vita into a Wii U controller for a much better console, sales would go through the roof.
Yeah, if I could play any PS3 game on my Vita, anybody who is like me that was ever on the fence would purchase that. Any father would purchase that in a heartbeat, because that means that if you are a one television household, you could play your favorite game. I could be playing Assassin's Creed 3 and just be like, well, the graphics aren't going to be as cool as on my 46-inch high-definition TV, but at least I'm playing the game. And if you're...
That Nintendo thinks so too. That's what the Wii U is all about. To be able to give the kid the controller and let them play a console quality game in the house without taking over the whole television, so we all have to watch you try to make the same jump for 20 minutes.
Win.
I don't get it. But then again, I also thought Star Wars was lacking microtransactions. Oh, wait, I was right there too.
What? Manifesto appearance amendment.
We gotta go.
Wait, did it already ding? Oh my god, it did. Holy crap. I was like, I thought we were halfway through.
The Bears? They lost to the Niners?
That's right. But I was so excited for that. My bad. I'm so sorry. Give us a call, 408-228-4911, or send us an email to show@secondfunniespodcast.com. Join the conversation at the Book of Faces, facebook.com/secondfunniespodcast. Follow the show on Twitter @secondfunnies. Follow me on Twitter @JustinWorsham. On behalf of my good friend Kevin Miller, this is Justin Worsham saying, okay, bye. So long, so very long, so very long.